Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the January 6th edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView. View.
Well, for a moment, it looked as if 2012 would start with a weekly move higher, and then came Thursday and Friday. Corn, soybeans, and wheat all finished the week lower. We'll discuss what that means in context of next week's crop production and grain stocks reports today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor. Our panelists today in studio include Aaron Curtis from Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can find us online at willag.org. Well, let's open our discussion today with this question. There was a moment, of course, this week when it sure looked as if things were going to set up for another leg up. Bases tightened in Decatur, the markets rallied, and then it failed. Why, Aaron Curtis?
Well, I think it comes down to two of the things that we've been trading off of here last 5 or 6 weeks. One is the South American weather. There's just enough rain in the forecast, I think, for Argentina for the middle of the next week to kind of cause some pause in the markets just in case coverage levels and totals come in a little bit better than expectations. I think the market wants to be a little cautious about that. And the fact the dollar continued to rally here at the end of the week, trading to the highest level we've seen since late 2010, those kind of things helped take a little pause in the market and back things up a little bit.
Wayne Nelson?
Well, a couple things, Todd. Number one, the European financial situation stepped on the parade. And also, like you said, the weather that way. But I think another thing is we just don't have the number of traders out there, the money available that we had a year ago in this market. If we look at the open interest, it's way down from a year ago. And we don't have near the funds out there ready to jump back in because they're all very cautious and in the risk-off mode.
And Dan Zwicker.
Well, the storyline this year so far, and it basically started last year, is number one, as Aaron mentioned, and also Wayne, is that the dollar has been strengthening. We went above the 50% retracement level of the decline that we saw here basically since late August. And now that, and we actually punched through the high that was posted in January 11. So technically that dollar now is breaking out to the upside. That's causing deflationary pressures in the grain complex. That keeps buyers kind of more absent, and you can kind of see by this week's export sales numbers, they were not impressive at all here this morning. So we don't have the storyline in commodities, at least at the moment, is tilted toward the bear rather than the bull, whereas the last few years the storyline has been all on the bullish side.
Now, Dan, when we talked on Thursday during our regular discussion of afternoon during the closing market report, one of our listeners heard you talking about the dollar. You started that discussion with it. At that point, we hadn't broken through yet. We have now. I think you gave us a target of 88 after we went through 81.50. Is that right?
Yeah. Longer term, when you look at the dollar index, even from a monthly point of view, long-term monthly, it is we've been kind of in a 10-year window here of dollar weakness. And somewhere here, my guess, in the next 18 months, we're going to break out to the upside and have a major run higher in the dollar. But in the short run here, we could be beginning to start that big move with today's or this week's push. Basically, what the objectives are when you look at them on a weekly chart is to go up and touch the downtrend line drawn off of the, I think, the high that we made in like March of 2009. That was during the turmoil of the financial situation. And that was, and then I think we had another major high there like in June 10. So, and that line would come into play somewhere around the 87 level. I don't know moving to that level is going to be terribly bearish, but it is definitely going to be a price depressant on commodity rallies based upon deflationary pressures. Now, individual supply-demand fundamentals for each commodity may be able to override that. That will depend upon probably a lot what happens in South America here next week as far as if their weather pattern continues to stay dominantly on the hot and dry side. Weather patterns kind of follow in 6-week increments. They kind of follow the seasons. Next week will be 3 weeks from the first day of summer for in South America, or the first or the third week for a winter for us here. So we're in a window where that weather pattern can shift. If it doesn't shift, then that dominant hot and dry pattern stays with us then probably right on into first part of February, and I think that would give us some ammunition for this market to propel higher.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the others, but I want a quick and very short response on this one. You mentioned not terribly bearish for the marketplace if it went to that 87, 88 area. What does that mean? Do you have a number for corn and for soybeans or not?
Well, that's I suppose that's in the eye of the beholder. It would probably be bearish compared to what we've been used to of this $6.57 corn. I suppose a number like that could take us down below the $5 mark. A number like that on soybeans, and we've been accustomed to this $12 to $14 range. I suppose that could take us down down underneath the 10 level, and then we kind of go from there.
Okay, let's take a look at some of the numbers that came in from Chicago for the week. We'll start with the wheat. March contract had a high of 670 and three quarters, the low at 624 and a half. It settled down 28 cents at $6.24 and three quarters. July wheat at 660 and a quarter, down 26. March corn, $6.64 and a quarter, the high, the low at 639 and a half. Settlement price there, 3 cents lower on the week at 643 and a half. December contract at $5.75, down 11 cents. When you look at new crop corn, and we have a $5.75 price in Chicago and a cash price which is in the 545, 550 range, I suspect. Is this a place, or was it a place earlier in the week when we were 15 or 20 cents higher, that producers might have thought about making a new crop corn sale?
You know, we did see a little bit of interest picking up here late last week and early this week in new crop corn. Up to that point, of course, it's been pretty quiet. But I think between 575 and up to that 590 area, I think it's a place where, especially if you haven't made any sales, you can get a little more active and maybe get something on the books.
Wayne?
There was interest beginning. A lot of people have that six stuck in their head from, I missed that, I'm waiting for that, I wanted to go back there. Will it get back there? That's the question.
Do you think?
you know, we've got to see next week's weather from South America. If it stays hot and dry down there, I think we can.
Next week we have other things that are happening as well. We'll have the grain stocks and we'll have ending stocks out. We'll have the final production report numbers that are coming in. What do you think the grain ending stocks might look like, Aaron, as we get through the Thursday reports? The average trade gas at corn is 749. It's at, what, 848 at the moment from USDA?
Yeah, I'm looking for something closer to about 800 million, I think. I think we'll see production lower a little bit. The question is on demand. Where are we going to see much movement in that part? I think the ethanol number is pretty stable at this point. I think it'd be interesting to see how the USDA gauges the Argentinian situation as far as U.S. exports, see if they adjust anything there. Obviously, we know from the weekly numbers that we see on a weekly basis from the U.S., those have been pretty dismal, but be interesting to see how the USDA gauges that moving forward, and don't see a lot of movement in the feed and residuals. So I think we'll see that production number go down a little bit and tighten those ending stocks up.
Wait, go back, talk about that ethanol number, because, of course, we don't have the credit anymore, but you think it's stabilized and the mandate is there and that's just going to make it work?
Yeah, I think it comes down to economics. If we still continue to have unleaded prices below, or excuse me, above ethanol prices, I think it's still going to be advantageous for the blender to splash unleaded with ethanol as long as that ratio stays the same. I think for the most part we're going to continue to see ethanol move along. Now, the last couple weeks of December, we saw over 100 million bushels of corn each week being grind for ethanol. I don't think we can maintain that pace moving forward, which at that pace would suggest something higher than the 5 billion. I don't think we're going to be able to maintain that pace, so I think we will continue to hang out in there as long as those economic fundamentals continue to suggest that.
The soy complex on the week had a high of $12.35 in the January's, the low there. I don't actually have the low in front of me, but a settlement price at $11.89.5, down 9 cents. November beans, $11.91.25, down 13 on the week. Ending stocks projected by the analyst on a trade average now for beans at 233. Now, that's not far off what USDA is at the moment.
No, Todd, and I think that we're not looking for any real surprises there, except that we will probably lower the amount of beans that we had scheduled for export because we are so far behind. Also, you know, we're not looking at near the problem as what South America might be producing as of yet like we are at the corn crop because of the weather, because it's like the 3rd or 5th of July down there. Beans aren't in trouble yet. They've still got another 3 weeks to get some rain, 3 to 4 weeks, and see how it goes. So we're not looking for that. And, I mean, we saw the way the beans traded on Friday. An old person reminded me today that, you know, maybe the bean market's trying to tell us they want to see corn acres.
Do you think that's the case?
I think it was just there wasn't a reaction there because the weather isn't threatening there yet. But corn is much more what we're pushing for. We're looking for more acres there. You know, if we can keep the ethanol production up, and if we do have a corn shortfall in South America, it's probably going to be advantageous for the U.S. farmer to raise corn.
Dan, do you think USDA will do anything with the grain stocks figures?
We're going to have a grain stocks number, and then they're going to back out of it. And then they're going to give us a production number, and then we're going to end up with a supply-demand balance sheet. So, they're going to give us a grain stocks number. The question is will that grain stocks number imply major disappearance during the last quarter here of the year because maybe their number that they gave us was too high on September 1 or not. That's what everybody's going to be watching, is what the implied disappearance is for the quarter. And like I kid everybody, I got a new silver belly hat for Christmas, and I had a bull rider's crease put in it. So I'm ready for some bullish numbers here as we go into 2012.
All right. So when you guys all take a look, and I'll follow up with both Wayne and Dan on this one, when you go back and follow up with the question that I asked Aaron earlier about making those sales. I know, Wayne, that you said six maybe they're thinking about it, but below that might be a good idea. Dan, are you in the same boat on new crop corn sales?
I'm a seasonal guy, and the odds at the moment tells you to stay patient with new crop sales. I mean, percentage-wise, only a third of your calendar year highs are made during the first 4 months of the year. So you got two out of three chances that the highs are going to be made later than that. You got about half your highs are made during June, July. Now, some of my cyclical work does imply that you have to be awful careful this year of looking for one of those early calendar year highs. But I'm going to be a little more patient and wait until we get a little closer to the growing season. Maybe mid-March is when I might begin to get nervous. But from mid-March forward, I'm going to get real nervous for an early year calendar year high.
That would give him a chance, Wayne, to take a look at the crop insurance figures that would set in February, right?
So, yes.
Very nice way to put a nice floor, risk management, into the marketplace. What kind of changes, by the way, will there be in crop insurance for the year?
Some good news for the farmers. They're going to be able to, there's a new program that's going to help raise their APH, and they'll be able to insure more bushels per acre.
Thanks so much. That's Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group. Wayne Nelson, who you just heard, with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. And, of course, Aaron Curtis is here. He's from Midco. We'll be back in just a couple minutes when we'll talk with Michael Cordonier. He's at Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey. The statewide average temperature for the week was 33.4 degrees, that's 7.4 degrees above normal. The statewide average precipitation was 0.2 inches, which was well below the normal of 0.6 inches. For December, the statewide average temperature was 5.9 degrees above normal and ranks as the ninth warmest December on record. The statewide average precipitation for the month was 3.4 inches, that's 3/4 of an inch above normal. Snowfall was well below normal across Illinois, with totals of less than an inch in southeastern Illinois and 1 to 2 inches elsewhere. The forecast for the next 5 days includes temperatures that are 12 degrees above normal. Highs on Saturdays are expected to range from the low 40s in northern Illinois to the low 50s in southern Illinois. Lows Saturday night are expected to be in the 20s. Sunday is expected to be pleasant with highs ranging in the low 40s in northern Illinois to the upper 40s in southern Illinois. No significant precipitation is expected for the next 5 days. However, our mild winter may come to a screeching halt soon. The National Weather Service has identified a potentially significant winter storm on January 12th and 13th with heavy snow and much below normal temperatures across Illinois and the Great Lakes. If this pans out, it could be our first significant winter weather of the season. I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the January 6th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Wayne Nelson at L&M, Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group, and Aaron Curtis from Midco. On the phone line, our guest from Hinsdale, Illinois, Michael Cordonier. He's at Soybean and Corn Advisor. Michael, thanks so much for taking the time with us. I know you have been watching with great interest what's been happening in South America. Can you tell me about the corn and the bean crop there in the respective nations and your expectations at this point?
Sure. Well, up until this point, the corn has been impacted the most than soybeans, and I would say Argentina impacted more than Brazil. Now, it was another dry week in Argentina and southern Brazil, and the forecast is for some rain in Argentina early next week and then rain later in the week in southern Brazil. And I think this is going to be a very important rain event. If there are heavy amounts and widespread coverage, first of all, it's not going to reverse the damage already done to the corn, but it could help the farmers in Argentina finish planting their corn. They still have about 650,000 hectares of corn to plant. Now, the drop-dead date for planting is about January 15th. So if they get a good rain early next week, I think some of that corn will eventually get planted. And then a good rain would stabilize the soybeans as well. But in order to do that, I think they would need 1 to 2 inches with 80% coverage. If it's less than that, then it won't be much help, and then you would make the next rain event very important as well. Now, where the rain is needed the most in Argentina is northwest Buenos Aires, southern Cordoba, and southern Santa Fe. It's where those three provinces meet. Unfortunately, that is the heart of the production in Argentina. That is the Iowa of Argentina, so to speak. In Brazil, they need the rain in northwestern Rio Grande do Sul, western Paraná, and in the southern Mato Grosso do Sul. Now, that area has been very dry. Some areas now are going about 45 days without a rain. Now, they have done some early harvesting of soybeans in western Paraná. Early yields are disappointing, as you might expect. 17 to 35 bushels per acre is the range. They were hoping for the mid-40s. But those early beans have been dried now for 45 days, so it's very low as expected. Also, we don't talk too much about Paraguay, but Paraguay is the third largest producer, and the production in Paraguay is between those two areas I just mentioned, and they're dry as well. Now, I think both the corn and the soybean numbers could move lower in both countries. We'll see what the forecast looks like on Monday, but I think there is a very high probability that these estimates might go lower. In Argentina, I have the soybean estimate at 52 million tons and the corn estimate at 25. Now, if anything, I think I'm too high at 25 for Argentine corn. And depending on the rainfall next week, I think that might go down 2 or 3 million tons. In Brazil, I have the soybean number at 73 and the corn number at 60. Now, I think I might be a little bit high on Brazilian beans. I think that might come down 1 or 2 million tons next week, and maybe a million tons down on Brazilian corn. But the corn in Brazil is kind of a hard thing to do because they have the second crop of corn that they're going to plant here over the next month, month and a half. And I got a projected a record Safrinha corn acreage. So if the weather would cooperate, that second crop could compensate for some of the problems in the first crop of corn in southern Brazil. If next week's rain is disappointing and the pattern does not change and we go back to hot, dry conditions, then I think we got a real big problem in South America.
Michael, the USDA has corn exports out of Argentina at 20 million metric tons. Where would you put that number now? And if it continues to be dry, where could that number end up?
Well, they need about 9 or 10 million tons for domestic consumption. So if it's 20 million tons, that would imply a production of 29 million. That's not going to happen anymore. So I think a worst-case scenario for Argentine production might be down in the low 20 million ton range. So that corn export could drop to 10 million tons out of Argentina. Now, speaking about that, the Argentine government has taken a more friendly approach to exports. They have opened up the wheat exports, and they say they're going to open up the corn exports. In other words, once enough corn has been saved for domestic consumption, then you're free to export the rest of it at will. Well, that was before this drought occurred. I don't think they're going to backtrack on that opening up of the exports, but you never quite know if they get into a very severe case, you know, if this drought continues.
Michael, how much do you think that that will change the corn exports for the U.S. number if we do, in fact, come in and we're semi-dry next week?
Well, it's going to give us some more corn exports, no doubt. And also you've got to combine Brazil along with that, too. If Brazil's number goes down, it's going to give us another window of opportunity. Look at the big picture here. I had South America corn at 10 million tons more than last year when we started a growing season. Actually, it was 11 million tons more. Now I'm down to 7 million tons more than last year. And if things keep going south, we might be down to an even sort of production compared to last year. So there's, you know, 7 to 11 million tons gone from what we thought was going to be there. So certainly it gives another opportunity. Sort of conversely, for soybeans, you know, they're starting to harvest soybeans in Mato Grosso and in Paraná. This is quite early. It's about 3 or 4 weeks earlier than last year. There's already vessels scheduled to arrive at the port of Paranaguá on January 15th. So I think there'll be beans in exportable position very early this year. Brazil is going to have an early start to the export season for soybeans. And January, if the weather cooperates, January is going to be a record export month for soybeans out of Brazil. And certainly February is going to be probably a record as well. So what gives us to us in corn a little bit, take it away a little bit in soybeans.
We've been talking about South America here. What's your general ideas of what may happen here in North America as we approach the spring growing season?
Well, I am a little bit concerned about this. A couple of things. First of all, the weather's been very mild. There's been hardly no winter. So the ground in a lot of areas is unfrozen. It's not covered by snow, so there's no snow percolating down into the soil. And we got a lot of evaporation, and we already had drier conditions going into the fall. So I am concerned about the subsoil moisture, especially in the western corn belt. Now, a dry spring gives us early planting conditions, but then you worry about the moisture later on in the summertime. Another concern is the amount of seed corn available for the farmer to purchase. They had a poor production year this year, as everybody knows. All those seed companies do their winter production, at least most of them, in Chile and in Argentina, where it's now in the middle of a drought, so I hope they got irrigated production down there. But I think there might be a concern for farmers to get their number one choice hybrid. They may have to settle for number two or number three. So I am looking at maybe 93 million acres of corn in the United States next year. But I think that's going to depend, of course, on the weather in the early spring and also the seed availability.
Hey, Michael, how do you go about collecting data out of South America?
Well, I go down there a lot. I just came back a couple of weeks ago from Brazil. So I go look myself. And also, you know, we got a lot of contacts. I'm on the phone all the time and then read all the newspapers I can. My cable service allows us to get Brazilian TV, so I'm watching the Brazilian news every night. And let me tell you, the dryness in southern Brazil was on the news every night. They're talking about the situation. There's dozens and dozens and dozens of municipalities have already declared emergencies. They're trucking water for human consumption and for livestock consumption. So it's a pretty bad situation in northwestern Rio Grande do Sul and in western Paraná. But Argentina, I think Argentina is not as bad as it was in 2008-09, at least not yet. But a couple more weeks of bad weather, disappointing rain event next week, and we could be as bad as 2008-09.
Michael, what's your feel on Brazilian ethanol production, and what's their feeling on, or their take on ethanol tariff going away?
Well, of all the good news out of Brazil as far as agriculture the last couple of years, the sugar sector and ethanol sector is not one of them. They had a terrible year. The total sugarcane tonnage was down about 10%. Sugar production was down 3 or 4%. And ethanol production down about 16 or 17%. They just had a really bad sequence of events. They had a couple frost in northern Sao Paulo. I was just through there about a month ago. I thought the cane that was planted, the last cane planted, looked really ragged, really bad. They need about 120 new ethanol mills in the next 8 years. And that's going to be really hard to do. That's good for American farmers because then we can export more ethanol to South America. They're frustrated that we took off the tariff, yet they're not in a position to take advantage of it.
Michael, thank you so much.
Always my pleasure.
Michael Cordonier is with Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Now a final word from our panelist in studio, Aaron Curtis from Midco.
The last five January crop reports have seen corn trade up or down the limit. At one point, we'll see if that holds true again this week.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Sounds like South American weather is what's in charge for next week.
And Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
Corn and soybeans finished out last year with quarterly reversals to the upside, and I think that lays the groundwork for more friendly news ahead.
And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. You can always find us online if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great week.